We've heard from MDs who are ACMG members who said, I didn't vote for this, and I don't believe in this. And if this continues, I will no longer be an ACMG member. The vast majority of time, genetic tests are ordered without a medical geneticist and without a genetic counselor.
Welcome to Genotypecast, a new podcast from Gray Genetics. Genetics isn't always black and white. News stories related to genetics often raise more questions than they answer. On Genotypecast, we bring you insight from genetic counselors. I'm your host, Eleanor Griffith, a certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service.
You're in a hospital setting as a non-MD, a woman, and a young woman. I think there is a Me Too moment here. It has to do with how women are treated differently.
On January 9th, the American College of Medical Genetics sent a letter to members of the House of Representatives voicing their opposition to H.R. 3235, a bill that would allow genetic counselors to be reimbursed by CMS for providing genetic counseling. The ACMG recommended additional language related to the scope of practice of genetic counselors, most notably opposing the ordering of genetic tests by genetic counselors. Joining me to talk about this ACMG letter and the reaction from genetic counselors, as well as many ACMG MD members, is Ellen Matloff. Ellen Matloff is a certified genetic counselor as well as the founder and CEO of MyGene Counsel, an innovative online platform that is designed to update patients and their doctors on pertinent research in genetic health. Ellen was also the founder of Cancer Genetic Counseling at Yale School of Medicine, directing operations there for 18 years. Her notable advocacy work includes acting as plaintiff in the 2013 BRCA gene patenting Supreme Court case. She is also an author of the four-part case series, Adverse Events in Genetic Testing, documenting serious errors that have occurred when certified genetic counselors were not involved in the ordering of genetic tests. There's been a lot of talk on Twitter about the ACMG letter. I think for someone who's not steeped in the genetic counseling field and following this, they've probably never heard of H.R. 3235. So how would you explain what H.R. 3235 bill is that's before Congress right now?
So I am certainly not an expert in the bill, although I've followed its progress and MyGene Counsel has signed on as a supporter. But as I understand it, it's really supporting genetic counselors as healthcare providers who can bill independently, and it doesn't get into scope of work. Is that how you understand it as well?
Yeah, exactly. Because my understanding currently, and I do have a little blog post on this on the Gray Genetics website that I'll include in the show notes, but that, you know, it's just this weird situation where Medicare will reimburse for genetic counseling provided by non-genetic counselors.
But insane, yes.
Right. But then, or maybe like practical and necessary, but they won't reimburse when it's actually provided by genetic counselors, which is just really ironic. I had actually never considered ACMG's position on this, and I just would have assumed that, of course, they would be in favor of it. And like you said, I don't think that the bill, to my knowledge, addresses scope of practice or certainly test ordering, which is kind of at the crux of ACMG's letter. It seems like they want scope of practice to be more specifically defined, but to specifically say that we cannot order tests independently. And really that's a state issue when it comes down to state licensure.
It is. And, you know, I think you've summarized it well, that this wasn't in this bill and it should not have been brought up, but I guess I would take it a step further and say that if you're going to say that you don't think genetic counselors who have graduate level experience in genetics are qualified to order genetic testing, then does that mean that the ACMG is also going to come out and say that we think physicians who haven't done a fellowship in genetics and other healthcare providers, including nurses, nurse practitioners, PAs, are simply not qualified to order genetic testing? Because if you're not going to come out and say that, then this is ridiculous. Right, that you're saying that people with graduate level training in genetics are less qualified to order genetic testing than healthcare providers with absolutely no training, experience, or ongoing continuing education in genetics.
Yeah, and that I wondered about that in reading the letter, and it was really unclear to me. And it seemed like from the Twitter conversations I saw that different people interpreted that different ways. In the letter, I'm reading from the letter, the ACMG believes that optimal patient care requires that genetic counselors work with or under the direction of a medical geneticist or other knowledgeable physician about the application of genetics and genomics information within their field. So medical geneticist or other physician knowledgeable, which, right, you know, sounds like they're definitely leaving it open. Although what does knowledgeable mean? You know, there's no certification for physicians who are non-geneticists, you know, to say that they are knowledgeable.
I mean, I think we've all worked with healthcare providers who are not board eligible or board certified in the field of genetics. And we often find that we are the ones who are educating them about genetic testing. And that's fine. We're happy to do that. That's part of our job. But to say that those healthcare providers, just because they have an MD or, you know, a PA or a nurse practitioner degree, are more qualified than genetic counselors is absurd. And I think the time has come for us to call that out, that this is absurd and that there are some historical reasons for this behavior, as well as potentially, you know, some other reasons that no one wants to talk about for these kinds of bullying tactics.
Yeah. Okay. And I want to ask you about that. But first, I want to ask, were you surprised about this? Like, I really hadn't given any thought to ACMG's position on this, and it just surprised me so much. And I guess, you know, I think of the two main genetics organizations that I have some attachment to, even though currently I'm not even a member of ACMG, is NSGC and ACMG. So I feel like there's also just like on an emotional level, it feels like very personal. Like I've completely misunderstood what I thought were some of the goals and values of the organization. But I mean, it seems like some people who were more acquainted at least knew that this letter was coming out.
Yes. And I've heard that people have known about this for months. I was not one of those people. And I guess I would say I was both shocked and not surprised at all, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Shocked in the sense that I didn't know what was going on. And I was actually about to go out for a hike with my husband on Saturday when I saw the Twitter feed, and I just, like, the top of my head almost blew off. But when I really thought about the history of genetic counselors and medical geneticists, and also kind of looked at how the field of medical genetics has changed in the past 10 to 15 years, and how that can be making MD medical geneticists feel like their area, their turf is getting invaded. Because, you know, when I first went into the field and I worked in pediatrics general genetics as my first job, so much of what we did in genetics had to do with physical exam and diagnosis based on physical features and dysmorphology. And I know a lot of genetic counselors who are newer out of school are shocked by that we didn't have tons and tons of genetic tests. And so the medical geneticist was doing all of that, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think it was really critical. I mean, even when I was in school for test selection, it was like essential to start with a physical exam. And now one of the geneticists I've heard her say, you know, it's really hard to get out of here without getting the microarray done. You know, there's just like certain standard tests where absolutely, ideally, there's a physical exam that should be done to help guide that. But in a situation where you don't have a medical geneticist available, it could make a lot more sense and be a lot more efficient to do some of those upfront tests and then use that information in combination with a physical exam when possible to move to the next step. So,
well, I agree. And I think that the loss of taking a detailed history and physical, and I mean, a detailed history, both personal and family, and then doing a detailed physical is kind of a lost art, and it should still be done. But now that we have more generous testing panels, oftentimes we don't rely on that history and physical as much as we used to. And so I can see how medical geneticists would feel edged out a bit. It reminds me in some other areas of medicine, and, you know, I kind of bemoan this because I don't think it's the right thing to do, but if someone comes in with a headache, instead of taking a detailed history and physical, imaging is ordered, right?
Yeah.
And You know, I think medical geneticists have a critical role. However, in some areas, cancer genetics being one of them, a detailed physical exam is really not part of the workup. It's not in most cases. That may be different in Cowden's disease or in some of the rare genetic syndromes, but oftentimes it's not necessary. And so to say that a genetic counselor can't do the counseling and testing independently is at this point antiquated, outdated, and in my opinion, it's just people trying to urinate in a circle around their territory and saying it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny to me. Like, I think what you're saying is probably really true about geneticists feeling edged out. But to me, it's so surprising because I think of their skill set as so unique and invaluable. And it's so difficult a lot of the time to see a geneticist, and you wait a long time to see someone. And it just makes sense to use their time in the best way possible, you know, which would not be seeing a patient with a family history of breast cancer. It's just like not a great use of their time or skill set. Sure. So I think that's definitely true. It's definitely not something I'd never considered. But yeah, I think institutional dynamics might add to that, you know, with maybe reimbursement being better in a cancer center, or there being like more funding in a cancer center than something like a pediatric center, which can be like a loss leader, pediatric mm-hmm. genetics.
Well, and I also think, you know, when we're being realistic, if we look at who is ordering genetic testing today, the vast majority of time, genetic tests are ordered without a medical geneticist and without a genetic counselor. And as you know, we now have multiple published studies, including my own, showing what kind of errors can occur when there is no genetics expert available. So for ACMG to come out and say, well, if there's no medical geneticist available, we don't want a genetic counselor involved in the test ordering, is just preposterous.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was well thought through, to be honest with you.
And I also feel like there's probably not a lot of recognition, at least among the general public, among people who are not genetic counselors or don't work closely with with genetic counselors, that genetic counselors in a hospital setting essentially are ordering the tests. There's just like maybe a visit they either order under the referring physician, or there's like the name of a doctor who they order under, who's never involved, who has no oversight. So I mean, it's kind of funny that, you know, we should have more accountability for the tests that we order that we don't have right now. But then of course it also makes it complicated. Like I work in a, you know, private practice setting, and patients like, or even a physician, like, can you order testing for my patient? I'm like, well, technically you have to order it. And they're like, but I'm referring to you. I was like, yes. However, you know, I have to order it under your name. So it's just really an absurd situation.
It is absurd. And I think that the timing of Katie Stoll's recent article out about how some of these at-home genetic test kit companies are, quote-unquote, using a physician who never takes their personal or family history, certainly never orders, never does a physical exam, never talks to the patient, and we're okay with that. Like, I think what this has done, in my opinion, is it's kind of unleashed the idea that someone needs to look into this and investigate what's being done, because genetic counselors should be ordering testing. And some of these other setups where there is no physician involved, no genetic counselor directly involved, really need to be investigated.
Yeah. I mean, my guess is that ACMG, you know, is also opposed to that, but it's just, you know, they're writing a letter that's like very targeted to one specific bill, but it seems to completely ignore like the context and like the social and healthcare structure in which we're all operating.
So I have a few thoughts about that. You know, I've been in the field of genetics now for 25 years. As I mentioned, I started my career in pediatric and general genetics. And both of my parents are physicians. And they kind of watched what I was facing in the field. And my dad said something to me long ago that has resonated with me. And that was, you're in a hospital setting as a non-MD, a woman, and a young woman. Those mm-hmm. are three things you've really got going against you. And I think it's one of the things that we don't talk about often in our field is that the majority of genetic counselors are female and the majority are young women. Mm-hmm. And hey, if you're going to go up against someone, might as well be the young women. It's just an easier target than targeting some of these big companies with a lot of money and a lot of legal support to, you know, back up their claims or to go against other physician groups, which don't have the same demographic.
Yeah. And it took, well, at least I think the first, I think Sarah Witherington was the first one who posted something on Twitter that I saw related to the idea. Is that the same for you?
Yeah.
And, you know, just, you know, the idea of this just being sexist. And I know, you know, even before this had come out, you know, some of us talk about just like, well, if we were a profession of 95% men instead of 95% women, how different would it look in terms of salaries and recognition? And I, you know, like one of my colleagues just saying, you know, talking about like diversity and genetics and getting more men and like, how much is that a good goal? She's like, oh, I definitely want more men in the profession because that's the only way our salaries will go up. I was like, oh yes, that's like an interesting, you know, an interesting way to look at it. But I, you know,
sad but true. And, you know, if you look at male genetic counselors, although we have very few of them as a whole, they're paid better than the women, ironically.
Right. Consistently, like every single survey that they do, men make more. Yeah. It's just it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine the ACMG geneticist just saying, you know, that male genetic counselors, if we just like looked male, we were older, that they would be saying you can't order testing. It does feel, and you know, mean impossible to prove, I guess, but it does feel that it very much has to do with the fact that we're women, and definitely mostly younger women.
And I don't think that this was a decision that was made by them thinking like, let's pick on the young women. I definitely don't think that, and I'm actually quite optimistic that ACMG might change their position and that they've seen the opposition to this. It's made them have second thoughts about it and that they'll change their stance. But I will say, outside of ACMG, just for genetic counselors in general, in terms of job opportunities, I think there is a Me Too moment here. Mm-hmm. And Me Too doesn't have to do only with, you know, sexual assault or sexual harassment. It has to do with how women are treated differently. And, you know, as I said, my mom is also a physician. I've seen this with her my entire life, how differently she was treated than male physicians. And it's still going on. I saw a woman on Twitter post the other day that she asked a male colleague what happens when he introduces himself to a patient as Dr. Smith, and the patient says like, oh, hi, Tom. And he looked at her in a gasp, like that had never happened to him. And it happens to female physicians all of the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that we just need to call it what it is. Like, these are some of the female biases that we face. And because our profession is mostly female, guess what? We face it more often.
Yeah. Do you think that ACMG has noticed and been surprised by the reaction on Twitter?
I do. This got their attention. I don't think they anticipated that this would be so upsetting to all players involved, not only genetic counselors, but we've heard from MDs who are ACMG members who said, I didn't vote for this and I don't believe in this. And if this continues, I will no longer be an ACMG member. We've also heard from PhDs and for other healthcare providers in the genetic space who say, this isn't going to work for me. And so maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I, you know, there are a lot of smart people in ACMG. I'm hoping that they'll take a look at this and reconsider their opinions.
Well, I like that note of positivity. For me, it was so discouraging to see this come out. Genetic counseling is still an underrecognized profession. We have a long ways to go, you know, in terms of reimbursement, recognition, licensure, being able to order testing. And, you know, just I would have assumed like, well, ACMG is obviously like on our side. We're on the same page. And this was just like such a surprise.
You know, it was a surprise, mm-hmm. but taking one really positive note from this, I think it shows the power of a groundswell of movement, and that people think like, oh, I'm on Twitter. What does that do? It's just a waste of time. If you take the time on Twitter to comment and retweet something and make your opinion known, that it can make a difference. And so I'm very optimistic that ACMG will change their stance and move forward in the genomics era with genetic counselors, because we're their partners and their advocates, and they need to be our advocates as well.
If you are a certified genetic counselor and would like to come on GenotypeCast to talk about an issue related to genetics in the news, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendations.